Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. I'm your host as ever, Louis McCaffrey, and this week I am joined by a very handsome, a bit more hairy than he was last week. It's Christopher Bowd. How are you, Tiberius?
Great, Louis. Hey, well. Glad to be back. Keeping the run up here. See if we can get it through to next week on the People's Pod, but I doubt it. Yep, Alan shaking his head. He knows things that I don't.
It feels like the old days, Bowdy, you know? When we didn't have so many high-quality contributors, and it was literally just us, so you had to be there. But no, it's lovely to have you 2 weeks in a row. We're also joined by a returning, he's not been on in a while. We've all missed him very much. I know his CSC has missed him massively. It's Barry Gallagher. How are you, Barry?
I'm very good. Glad to be back here. And Celtic have had a wee upturn since I've been last on, but maybe not the weekend, which we'll come on to, but good to be here and nice to see you, handsome gentleman.
It's always better when there's a bit of negativity. See, when things are going well, the pods are never as good. So we'll get there. And we're also joined by the real expert in the room. It's Alan Edgar. How are you, Alan?
Good. Thanks very much for having me on, mate. I appreciate it. Always love doing it.
You weren't on the agenda. You weren't on the agenda, were you?
No, I was not. When Celtic don't do so well, I have a tickly cough. So I had a very tickly cough yesterday.
I like that though. It's you know, the weekly's getting the chance to get your fresh thoughts on it. If you're wondering what the hell the agenda is, the agenda is an award-winning, fantastic weekly show that comes out on a Monday. And to get it, you need to subscribe at thecynic.co or thecynic.co. And you can hear us talking about Celtic, not just constantly. In the weekly, but constantly. There's podcasts daily. Every single day. I don't know how we do it.
I like that was award-winning. In-house, award-winning, I believe. But award-winning nonetheless.
They all count, Alan. They all count.
It's a bit like when like we haven't won the league and the player gets player of the year. And you're like, ah, fuck. What's the matter?
Right, so listen, we're going to start off with a big breaking news of the day. Big Al Chops, big Tony, has secured himself a new deal. He has signed a deal till 2025, I believe. So he'd been given, obviously in pre-season when there was no one else to play his position, he'd been given a one-year deal, and I think we all questioned it, but probably understood it, considering the fact that we're going to have to play qualifiers, and he was literally the only choice in his position. Alan, we'll come to you first. Your immediate thoughts on giving Tony Ralston a new deal, and you know, can you see some sense in it? Because I think he's going to get a lot of hate.
Yeah, I can absolutely see the sense in it. It's not the most glamorous contract renewal out there. You know, that's something we've struggled with over the last couple of years. You know, there's plenty of players we wish had signed new deals, especially, you know, around this time last year. But he signed an extension in the summer, a one-year deal, which was very kind of poorly received, as was most news at that time. But I think it's now about that deal he would have signed would have been on very limited terms, I think, to reflect his position in the squad. And I think given what he's done since, he's been a solid performer. I think he's done very well considering where he was, and to come in and be a pretty solid performer. Not spectacular, definitely still get deficiencies in his game. But I think it's about reflecting proper terms for what is now a first-team player or at the very least a squad player in the team. So I think it's just about tidying up that contract, and I think it's about trying to almost protect a little bit, because if he didn't sign a new deal, then you would be talking in 8 weeks that he could talk to other clubs. And some people might find that unlikely, but I think there's a lot of Championship clubs down in England that would probably look at what he's done over the last couple of weeks and would think that he's a player that if you could pick up the free, then he would be absolutely worth it. So I don't have a problem with it. I think I've seen a lot of people that are concerned about the length of the deal. But you know, if you're giving him a new deal, you've got to reward it. It's not going to be spectacular terms. He's not going to be the best paid player at the club. It's just about tidying that contract issue up. And I think he's done really well. And it's important to reward players when they do well. So, you know, I'm not going to... I certainly wouldn't begrudge him it. And I think I think he has earned a new deal.
Yeah, I mean, Barry, this is one thing that, you know, and I totally get the argument of we want the best quality that we can get in every position. And I think we would all be honest and say that Tony Ralston is probably not of the same calibre maybe as a Juranovic or, you know, some other fullbacks that we've had over the years who've played international football, who he can bank on maybe taking you, you know, being able to go up the levels, especially in European football, for example. But at the same time, we're a club that preach to be a family club. We want nothing more than our own young players, Celtic fans coming through the academy. So, and we want to improve players. You know, another thing about Ange was we all had hoped that Ange would improve players and we wouldn't just be working with what we had and, you know, the kind of way that Lennon did, and it's just this player can do X, Y, and Z and there's no kind of higher progression for them. Tony Ralston has came in, he's done well. He's not claiming to be the best player in the team, but he's done well. He has definitely improved. So he kind of deserves it, does he not?
Yeah, definitely. And I think he probably is out in front of the person who epitomises what Ange has done in a short period of time. He's taken everything on board. He's he seems very popular around the squad, and he has done well. I don't agree with Alan. I don't think it'll be massive money that he's on. And it's an easy deal to do, but like Alan said, I think that because of what he's taken on board from Ange in such a short period of time, there will have been clubs in England who have noticed that, and it's a player who's willing to learn, willing to try and develop himself. So I have no issue with it. And you can see from some of the reactions from the other players, like Sir Joe Hart, they are sending their congratulations and rightly so, saying that it's well deserved and well earned. So it's not going to be a lot of money. I know some people are disappointed, like the length of the contract and saying that we need a better backup, but you can see what Ange has done with him in a short period of time. And if we're all in an Ange, I'd like to think that Ange had a big hand in this. So, yeah, no issues. No issues with it.
Yeah, and it does send a bit of a message about to the rest of the, not just the first team, but of course the youth academy as well and the players below them, that there is a pathway there. You know, we've all talked about how the club haven't had that pathway and we've lost a lot of talent. Surely Tony Ralston getting a new deal like this, which I totally agree with the guys, it's not going to be, you know, a life changing sum of money necessarily, but having that security of a contract, you're a professional footballer, you've got a contract, that's your job for the next few years. The youngsters looking up to him will see, I could do that. I could be Tony Ralston. If I work hard enough, as hard as he's worked, I could get that deal.
Absolutely. I think you're right. It does encourage the younger players we've got in the squad and the guys in the youth academy. I think also when you look at it, you know, we gave him a year's contract. You'd want to resolve that one way or the other. You know, you wouldn't be wanting to wait to summer to resolve that. You want that resolved by the end of this year. And I don't think anyone could ask Tony Ralston to have done more. You know, from where he was when he signed that contract to where he is now, it's night and day. He's applied himself. He's improved. He's became a dependable first team regular. Is he perfect? No. Could we improve our quality there? Possibly, aye. But no, I think he's earned it. And I think, you know, Alan talked about English players, English teams maybe being interested in them as a free. You know what? They might be interested in them for a little bit of cash as well down the line. So you've secured an asset. See if we get to next summer and we bring in a left back and a right back that are better and, you know, we're happy with the two right backs we've got. Great. I'm sure there's a Championship side or somewhere else that'd be willing to give us some cash for Tony Ralston, and that's fantastic. He's also not turned 23 yet, which isn't as young as it, you know, might have once been in the footballing terms, but, you know, the boy's still got growth and development and improvement to, well, potentially improvement to make. So, yeah, I'm absolutely all for it. You know, guys put in the work. He's got behind Ange, he's got behind the philosophy, and he's been rewarded for it.
Alan, will you go come in there?
I just think as well, but we're all quick to point out about, you know, the transfer window and how we struggle to do business. You know, for me, January is about bringing in one or two quality players. It's not about bringing in five or six. So the idea that potentially looking at the depth of our squad and flagging up the backup right back position as an area that's going to be addressed and needs to be addressed quickly is, to be honest, it's laughable, because we've got two number eights that can play in that position at the moment. One of them's currently injured, which caused us a problem at the weekend. So that is your real area of concern. If you're sitting and thinking this is a shambles, this is a joke, actually, you really need to take a step back and look at the wider squad and think, where are the priorities? Because otherwise, if you just look everywhere and think everywhere's a priority, you're going to end up with a transfer window in January and then next summer where you bring in 8 or 9 and the quality's not there. It's about looking and trying to bring in 1 or 2 at a time to improve the first team. Anthony Ralston might find himself later this season or next season not a part of, you know, the starting 11. And I think most people can understand and accept that. But the idea that at the moment that you really need a better right back is just not the priority in this squad at the moment. So tidying up that contract, make sure that you don't then get caught short and perhaps lose out on a first team player at the moment. It just makes complete sense to me. It really does. And
Alan. The central midfielder's gone. Tony Ralston, that's used. Oh, the Ralston Bucks, they're gone now.
Well, I mean, now I feel incredibly stupid. that has worked out really badly. I bet it was a really good centre midfielder.
Oh, well. It's incredible. You would never guess.
This is what the cynic was. Anthony Ralston, you've lost an international midfielder from Japan.
I mean, just to wrap up, I think you've got to be happy for him on a personal level. See if you can't be happy for the guy who is a massive Celtic fan, comes from a Celtic supporting family. His family were there. I just read there that his family were with him today for signing his contract and things like that. So good on him. He's worked hard and he deserves it. Right, let's get to the football. Fucking Celtic, yeah. You know, you come back, you're on a run.
Can we get back to Tony Ralston?
I know. We'll maybe come back to him. We had the chance to go top of the league and we fucked it. We absolutely fucked it. Alan, you know, there was quite the reaction after the game. You know, it was 0-0. It wasn't a defeat, but I think it probably felt to a lot of people like it was, or people were certainly reacting that way. What was your reaction after watching it, and how do you feel now? Are you any different now a few days on?
I'm not convinced I am, to be honest. I mean, my immediate reaction was, burn everything down. This is a complete disaster. And that's just the way it is, you know. There's games that you can go into and you kind of think that you will drop points. And sometimes, you know, you will drop points over the course of the season. I get that. And maybe, you know, we are a very irrational fan base. I understand that, but that's because we're passionate. And we are fans. That's all we are. So I don't think there's anybody that was watching that on Saturday that felt anything other than really, really being annoyed. You try and be rational, but it's pretty hard. And I think it's hard to come away from it and not feel pretty critical of the players. Yes, absolutely. But I think the manager's made a bit of a misstep. He will have to find time to rest, particularly Kyogo this season. There's no doubt about that. And he chose Saturday. Quite simply, your job as a manager, though, is to put out the team that's going to win games. 3 points on Saturday was as important as 3 points on Wednesday night at Easter Road, arguably should be a little bit easier. So it's disappointing. I think making 3 changes, one of which was enforced, making 2 further changes on top of that and bringing in Leah Labada and Giakoumakis, I just think it really changed the team a lot more than we probably would expect or we might have thought. I think Leah Labada has really struggled after what was a kind of strong start, certainly in terms of goals. And Giakoumakis is still very much an unknown quantity. When you pick players, you rotate players in, you need to get a performance from them. And I don't think you get a performance from either Giakoumakis or Leah Labada on Saturday.
See, on the Abada point, Alan, and maybe this is just, you know, it's maybe a hindsight thing and it seems a little too obvious, but you see a badder there and you think they're just going to sit deep, which obviously they did. They played very deep. They were quite happy to just deal with the crosses into the box like Livingston do. was it naive to put Abada there, a player who needs space? He doesn't like taking people on necessarily, but he can beat them for pace. Him having no space behind a fullback, was that obvious, or is that just something that we're saying in hindsight? But maybe there was another reason why the manager put him in.
I think one of the reasons you would probably argue for putting him in, if you want to make the case, is that firstly, he's a £4.5 million signing in the summer, so he should be able to play at home against one of the bottom three or four teams in the league. But if you are going to put as many crosses into the box as we did, and everybody knows how many crosses we put in, I think it was like 83 over two games. Break that down how you like. I don't remember the exact number from Saturday. But if you are going to put crosses in the box, Leila Bader, probably one of his strengths has been in the box. You know, he scored a fantastic header early in the season. When the ball's in the box, he's lively. The problem was the ball was not in the box at all on Saturday, so he was completely ineffectual. And the player that you would hope that would impact you a little bit more would be Giakoumakis. And I just think I can understand why you have to use them. You do need to rotate, but league games where a team is going to sit in like that to just continually shell balls out of the box, and we did the exact same away from home early in the season against them. That to me is not, we've run out of the ideas. That looks to have been a plan. You know, maybe try and win the second balls, make it difficult for them, but it really didn't work. And when you don't play well, when a manager makes changes, when you make a kind of tactical tweak, it seems, and it doesn't work, he's going to come in for criticism. You know, I'm fully behind the manager, absolutely no question, but he's not beyond criticism. And that performance on Saturday at home, I think after seeing what we are capable of in the matches before, I think he does have to probably take a little bit of flack for it. And I think his post-match interview after probably hinted a little bit at that. But, you know, he does have a limited squad, all these caveats, but I can't spend all season just going back to the transfer window in August. That's not going to do me any good. And, you know, you have to judge each game by its own merits, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit frustrating. I mean, I think you're right to kind of highlight the price tag that Abada comes with. Giakoumakis as well. You know, these are players that should be able to play against the likes of Livingston and play well. But Barry, I mean, I'll be honest. When I saw the lineup, I thought, oh, nice. Like, I think Lorenzo spoke about this in the agenda, and he said he's one of those Celtic fans that when he sees the team come out and it's got some changes, he's like, oh, I want to see this. You know, you're kind of up for it. I was very much like that when I saw the team. I thought, obviously, since we last had the weekly, we had the game against Hibs. And in the first half against Hibs, before Tom Rodgick got injured and things changed a bit, we were playing some absolutely scintillating football. It was fantastic. You saw, obviously, Giakoumakis had come on that game. I thought he'd done well. He'd scored the goal against St Johnstone, was it? The previous game. He'd done well against Ferencváros. I quite liked the big guy, and I thought up front, I can kind of see it. Someone who's going to maybe be a powerful option up there to rough up the centre halves potentially. But it never really kind of worked out that way, and he did have the case of a bit of the Ayetis about him. What was your thoughts when you saw the team come out? This is the reaction. That was a pure reaction line, but what were your thoughts?
I was conflicted because I think I'd kind of said that I thought that Giakoumakis would play, but I was also sort of mindful of the fact that when I saw that Abada was playing as well, and as Alan mentioned, we were already without Rogic, so a sort of main creative outlet wasn't playing, and then we change it up further by putting two less creative players in than had started at Easter Road. And one thing that I know that you're saying the point about maybe roughing up their defence, but that's what they want. They'll eat that up all day. That's what they've become accustomed to. And I think that the one thing that we had different and fit and available going into this game that we didn't have at the Tony Macaroni was Kyogo. Someone who was going to pull them all over the place and kind of free up space for the likes of Turnbull, McGregor, Jota, etc. So I was a wee bit worried when I saw that Giakoumakis was starting, probably more so worried that Abada was playing. But like Alan said, even it's Livingston at home, like, you should be taking care of them. I know that we've said, oh, we've had this hoodoo against them, and we've had a sort of, some of the best teams that we've had in the last 15, 20 years have struggled against them, but we can't keep going back to that. So do we just sacrifice points against Livingston now until the end of time, because it's what's always happened? And if you think back to Angie's very first press conference when we were there, and Aaron asked him about, Aaron kind of told him that we're going to face this, and how are you going to beat this teams that are camped in, and you have to find a way to do it. That's why you get paid the big bucks. That's why you've made it to Celtic. You need to break these teams down, and I think playing to their strengths by putting 80 odd crosses in over two games, putting a big striker who isn't very mobile, putting a winger who doesn't beat someone, it's easy to say in hindsight, but the warning signs were there, because they must have been rubbing their hands when they got the team lines an hour before kickoff or whatever. And that's not good enough, I don't think.
That's the last two home games, St Johnstone and Livingston. I mean, the St Johnstone game, we were struggling as well, you know, trying to find the breakthrough against a team that were just going to sit really, really deep and be organised. And we're kind of lucky they had a mistake. Ralston capitalises on it and Giamakis gets a goal. So we kind of got a breakthrough, and it maybe did come through a bit of luck. But I think, and we spoke about this last week, we are seeing teams maybe show us a bit more respect than what they did previously, maybe last season, where they are coming and they're saying, no, we are going to just sit deep here and try and make it tough for you and take a point away, rather than try and open up and possibly lose four or five. Is it a worry, though, that the fact that we are struggling to break them down? And do you have any answers? Because obviously you're bowed, so you probably get loads. But is there any clear thing that you think we should be doing differently?
Battering guys, just bat on them.
Aye,
hooks.
Fucking let on, Phils.
Aye. I think Kyogo's movement, Tam Rogic's magic. These are the keys to breaking down these defences, and we lost both of them. I think that was a huge blow. It's something, as you say, we're going to face game after game this season. So Ange really needs to start thinking about it and how he wants to work. I think it's, for me, when it comes to Abada, and I know you're absolutely right, Alan, you should be able to play against Livingston at home, but for me right now, Abada basically shouldn't start. Abada should be coming on off the bench, and he can earn the start, because his form recently has been horrendous. I would be playing any of the other wingers ahead of them. I don't want to skip too far ahead into the game, but obviously it was quite good to see wee Jamesy come back in, and he actually looked all right for what little time he had. Obviously, there wasn't a huge amount of time to make any impact, but hopefully we'll start to see a bit more of him as the season goes on as well. But yeah, we're going to have to, we can't just get to the wings and cross the ball in, because we know that's not going to work against a lot of teams. Or, you know, as you say, we're waiting on that wee bit of luck, which you get, you know. Really, it is fairly unfortunate if you've hit 80 crosses and you've not just got one wee bit of luck with a breaking ball or something like that, but we shouldn't be relying on that. We shouldn't be relying on just pure numbers and fortune. There should be more to the game plan than that.
You make your own luck, Bout. I've heard that said before. Now, listen, here's some wise words from an absolute fool. Some brilliant football being played by Celtic so far, despite the two cheating bastards with a whistle and a flag. Love the intensity and urgency. Superb, just need a goal to open the floodgates. Who said that? I fucking said that. That was 20 minutes into the game. My wee boy was knackered after a Halloween party on Saturday, so he needed a nap, so put him down for a nap, and I thought, right, I'll get a bit of peace here, I'll watch the game. But of course I didn't put the sound on because he's sleeping next to me, so I was sitting up in my bed watching the game with the sound off, and the first 20 minutes I thought, this is great, like, we really look as if we are really energetic and playing really well. But the whole goal to open the floodgates just never arrived, and then things, obviously, as the game goes on, it very much just felt like we could have been playing, and we've seen this loads of times where you think we could be playing for another couple of hours and we'd still not get a goal. It is frustrating, and obviously I think what you said earlier about the comments that Ange made after the game, we'll maybe come back to that in a minute. We did, of course, get a penalty. Now, we're going to leave the referee's performance to one side, because I can't be bothered wasting time with that. He's an arsehole, and they're
he's
all arseholes.
He's literally a cheat. We know that. That's done.
Absolute cheats. But the penalty, Alan, what is your... You've got some experience in the game. You've got a... Let's say you are the fullback. You are the Juranovic of the team. You've slotted away your last two penalties. I know it's hard to imagine, Alan, but play with me.
Jesus.
Keep with me. So you've scored the last two penalties, but the striker, if he's on the pitch, he takes it. You've got to be fucking fuming, surely. Was that a mistake? Was that Ange's mistake? Or should you be quietly confident that your striker that you've bought in, top goal scorer for Eredivisie, can take a penalty against Livingston in the last few minutes?
My legs are still a wee bit like jelly from you saying that I might be in the box, to be honest, never mind taking a penalty. I think when you asked at the start, how has your kind of opinions changed over the days? I think the penalties maybe where I have changed my mind a little bit. I think if he is the designated penalty taker, then context shouldn't really change that. And a 93rd minute penalty is probably as pressure as it gets. But if he is a designated penalty taker in advance of the game, you don't change that. That's just, you don't have those debates on the pitch. I do think he was very lucky to be on the pitch in the 93rd minute, if I'm being honest, because to me, I haven't watched the game back yet. Giacomac has offered nothing at any point in the game. And I think with some of the changes that you made, I think he was probably lucky to stay on there, given he is one as well that's not played a lot of football and didn't have a proper pre-season. To play 93 minutes in a game where you've offered nothing, I think I've probably got more of an issue with him still being on the park than I do with him taking the ball. Now, the penalty's awful. It's hopeless. Anybody can see that. But that does happen. But I'm surprised at some of the changes. And I think maybe going back to a wee bit of the discussion about, you know, what we want to see when Celtic play at Celtic Park. Bravery on the ball. You know, passing. I don't mind Celtic teams giving the ball away in the final third because you're trying to play through. But we were really, really safe. There was no movement, no running. I think a lot of that comes if you've got a striker that doesn't really want to pin the defender but also doesn't really want to make runs. You really shouldn't be getting 93 minutes at home at Celtic Park, in my opinion. And I think it's not a mistake having him as a penalty taker. If that's the decision that's been made in the week, stick with it. But he was very, very lucky to still be on there. And, you know, his penalty probably, it didn't even sum up his day. It just gave it a big full stop. But if that's what's been agreed in advance, that's fine. But it really was not a pretty penalty. And I think it should have been one of the changes to be off before, if I'm honest.
The lovely Christian Wolfe messaged me earlier with a thread from the Celtic Analysis, Cynic Analysis on Twitter. They have a XG timeline which shows Celtic's issues with creating big chances for most of the game before an explosion in the last 10 minutes. So, and that coincides with James Forrest coming on. The XG on the chances that we created in the last 10 minutes was really high. With those chances and Livingston's inability to create almost anything, the probability of Celtic winning was in the end almost 95%, 94.7%. Alan, is there any way that you can...
My action there is very much the Alan Partridge shrugging my shoulders there as soon as you're keeping that out.
It was beautiful. Is there any way that you can... Or any instance when it comes to games like that where you're just like... What can you do? Like, they defended for their lives. They really sat deep. They had no interest in playing football. There's going to be games where you just don't get the rubber again. You can't break them down. Is that ever an excuse, or should we always demand that Celtic break down a defence, no matter kind of who it is and how they're playing?
I think as fans, we're well entitled to, you know, be annoyed. And, you know, some people will say, you know, it does happen, and it does. The problem is that I think we... are going to be like this quite a lot this season. You know, the idea that we turned the corner after Aberdeen and then we built on it at Fir Park and Easter Road is great. This idea that it's going to be this straight line from bad to good, it really isn't going to be the case. There's going to be a lot more in between that. So for me, I always look at it and think 2 points dropped home against a team like Livingston on top of what was a really bad start away from home really starts to give you a problem. You know, your challenger for the title have really not started well either, but they're still sitting pretty with 4 points clear. And that to me is I can't take that as a positive. I know some people will and some people are a lot more relaxed, but just my mindset is probably negative. And I would like us to really have put them under pressure going into their game on Sunday, but we didn't. We missed that opportunity. And I'm not really a big one for saying, well, these things happen sometimes, because I don't think the performance merits that. I don't think it's acceptable to be thinking, well, the last 10 minutes we created some chances. When you do get given a real gift like that at the end of a game, you need to grab it with both hands. And I don't think the performance in advance of it really merited a win. So I don't think we created enough chances to properly win the game. I slightly disagreed with some of the kind of post-match comments there as well.
Barry?
I was just going to say, sometimes those matches do happen, but I think when there is self-inflicted factors, like dropping the best player that you have, who, for all intents and purposes, seems tailor-made for those types of games, where it is stuffy and his movement, as we've mentioned, would drag them all over the place. And Mikey Johnson, who had a good 45, 50 minutes at Easter Road. And I know you've got to handle him carefully because he's come back from injuries, but there is times when it just won't happen for you. But as we've said right at the start, we kind of contributed to that by playing players who aren't suited to those types of games. And I know there's an argument why they're at Celtic or they're not suited for those types of games, but that's for another day. So I'm like Alan. It's one of the angriest. I know it's kind of, there's not much to compare it to because we haven't been for so long, but it's one of the angriest I've been at the football. I think going into the last 10 minutes, I'm always optimistic that we're going to score, because you're always thinking back to the amount of times in our history that we've scored 91, 92 minutes to kind of snatch a victory for ourselves. But it was becoming clearer that we weren't even creating chances. And then when you get that penalty, you're just thinking, you know me, I pray anyway, but I was praying to saints. I didn't even know it existed, that I'd do anything. I'd do anything for that ball to cross the line. And then we haven't even mentioned yet that the chance, what, a minute or so after the penalty, yeah, is even worse. I don't know how the hell he's managed to do what he's done. But yeah, just really frustrating. And I think as the days have passed, I've kind of tried to go over it. But it's a massive week coming up, and we need to kind of put that behind us and get two positive results this week.
I don't want you to put it behind you just yet. I want you to stew on it a wee bit. Fucking it up, not going top of the league, you know, it would have put a bit of pressure on them going away to Motherwell. Obviously, they had a pretty emphatic result in the end against Motherwell at the weekend. But the psychological battle, do you think it matters, or is it far too early? Were we kind of maybe a bit foolish to suddenly start thinking, you know, we could end up points ahead of them before even Christmas and all this sort of thing? Or is that just fans being fans? Like, are you worried too much about the fact that we didn't go top?
At the time, it was maybe a bit more in focus, but well, a bit of time to think about it. I don't think it's that harsh. I would also like to just interject as well, go back a wee bit and say, get it right round, Alan, that those results do happen. Just like Alan, just like Barry did. But when they happen, when you've dropped so many points already, as well as what Barry said about kind of decisions that kind of jumped out at all of us as maybe being a bit iffy. But I psychologically do think, I mean, I don't think the Rangers got a lot of metal. So see, if we'd went top of the league, maybe that does impact their game on Sunday. But right now, this stage of the season, we've also got that international break coming up very soon. I don't think it's a huge blow. I think we're getting into crunch time. We've got a lot of games over December, so we'll see how we come out going into the Derby game. I think that'll be a lot more important if we drop unnecessary points and Rangers don't.
I just think. I remember us talking a couple of weeks ago. I'm not sure if it was in a pod or just chatting in the pub or whatever. And I remember, I think it's entirely reasonable to think that this squad can't compete across four different competitions at the moment. You know, the three cups and the Europa League. So you are going to have to rotate. That's fine. From my own perspective, and you guys might think differently, though, is I would really like to then narrow the focus down and say you're not going to win the Europa League. You know, you obviously get the Europa Conference, which you can go into, but I would really, for me, the biggest game are the league games, and the biggest game is that Livingston game. And I know people talking about, well, you're not going to drop Kyogo for Ferencvaros. I wouldn't personally, whatever team he puts out, I'll support, because if you want to rest players going into a massive game on Sunday in the league, because I think you have an incredible opportunity to win the league this year, and what that then brings, I think it's about trying to think, what can our squad compete across? Now, I know there's a lot of other factors in that in terms of squad morale, what does it say? But in reality, I really think if you're going to make changes, I would rather see them come in non-league games to get the rest into those players. Because Kyogo is going to obviously go and fly away more likely and link up with the Japan squad. So you're not going to get rest in there. So that would have been my preference. I know people might be, you know, disagreeing entirely with that. But you've not got the players or the squad depth to compete across every competition. So for me, I would rather just focus in on one as opposed to maybe spreading ourselves a little bit thin and coming second or third. Because to me, all that screams is the biggest, one of the biggest seasons of your life. That's what we did. We spread ourselves too thin across too many competitions, and then we ended up with nothing.
I would agree with that, Alan, but, and it's a big but, I'm a fat racist. No, it's Ferencváros game. Basically, we win that, we're in Europe. I mean, it'll be the Conference League probably, but we will be, and I just don't see, especially a manager, first time managing in Europe, is going to work that way. I can agree and I can understand what you're saying, but
As good a chance as he's ever got to manage in a Champions League, though, by just winning the league this year. Because he could win the league in his second season, and he might not get anywhere near the Champions League. This season, you win it, you get into the Champions League for both him, for the club, for everything. And I would not blame the manager if he just focused solely on the league this year. I really wouldn't.
This is exactly the points I wanted to move on to. It's like the rundown I had in my head, these have all managed to tune into it. I did actually have a question for Alan, and he's kind of preempted me and gave a bit of the response. But Alan, you've always been very vocal in your belief that we have expectations as a club to play in Europe and perform in Europe. You perform in Europe, the other results come. And then, as you've just alluded to there, you did say when we were, and I think a lot of us said it, I certainly said it, and I completely agree with you, that as you say, the squad's too thin, and we just can't compete on all fronts, and we need to prioritise. Have you ever said that before, Alan? And at any point during the recent results, has it made you think differently in terms of how you set your stall out for Europe? And I suppose it goes into just what are your aspirations for Europe? Is it just like Boud says, just win that game and stay in the thing until after Christmas? Or do you even care about staying in and playing in the conferences, you know, in terms of that competition?
This is probably the first time in my life that I've ever thought Celtic in Europe is just, it really doesn't fit this year. I think the squad depth is as poor as it's been probably in my lifetime. Or certainly in my season ticket going years from kind of 97 onwards. It's probably one of the weakest squads we've had. Maybe a couple other ones come close, but we wouldn't have probably been in Europe in those years. And I know it's difficult because teams always want to compete. You can't switch on and off for competitions. But I just think in terms of what you've got personnel-wise, we were going to persist with Tom Rodgett and David Turnbull for pretty much every game up until Christmas, and one of them is going to break down eventually. It's happened with Tom Rodgett. If you use some games to try and rest players, bring them out, bring them in and try other things, then, you know, I would rather it was maybe in a particular competition. There's not a lot of Scottish Cup or you know, Premier Sports Cup games, but if you that precious rest that you want for players, I just wouldn't do it in the league, because I think our recovery is so fragile at the moment that you see the difference when you take Kyogo out of the team. I mean, I think it was on a phone-in on Friday night, and then you heard David Martindale before the game Saturday. Marvin Bartley and the manager both delighted that Kyogo wasn't starting. All Marvin Bartley spoke about on Friday night was the threat of Kyogo. So the boost it would have gave them him not starting. that's going to be the case with every team we play this year. But I just think in the league games, you know, he's by far and away one of probably the best player in the country. Just let him play in the league, you know. And if he does need rest, then try and think about when you do it a little bit more. I think the manager will think a lot more carefully now about making changes, I think, against any team in the league, because we've been stung now.
Yeah. Barry, I mean, oh, sorry, on you go, Bud.
I was just going to say, when we get to League Cup, we've got the semi and the final to come, assuming we win the semi. I don't see him looking at that again, his chance to win a cup. He's not going to drop players.
Barry, if the team comes out for the Ferencváros game this week and Kyogo doesn't play again, and he rests Kyogo, he rests maybe one other player, first team kind of main pick of the team, would you think your reaction would be personally, and what do you think the wider fan base's reaction would be?
I think I would be quite happy. I'm the same as what the guys have said. This season's unique for the fact that I can't remember the last time that when you won the league, you went straight in. Maybe, I think it's maybe what happened a couple of times before. And we know how difficult it is to negotiate those ties. And while I agree with Boud, Ange probably wants to do well in every competition and his first opportunity in Europe, but it's going to be no consolation when if the league doesn't go our way and we get to the second last game of the season or the last game of the season and the players are all sitting with their heads in their hands.
We got to the quarterfinals of the inaugural Conference League.
Aye, yeah, exactly. So you need to be a bit smart with it. You need to have sort of foresight. And I think just when you were talking there, I was thinking Kyogo would probably be disappointed because similar to Ange, it's his first time in European competition. But if you could just say to them, like, the league is everything here. It's always everything anyway, but the fact that you're straight into the Champions League, the riches that brings, raising the profile of the club, hopefully sort of loosening the purse strings. That remains to be seen for the transfer budget. So
we can dream.
So I personally wouldn't be too disappointed, and I actually think see playing Giakoumakis and Abada, I think this is a game that suits their strengths more, because you're going to need someone to hold the ball up, and there might be chances for Abada to sort of run in behind on the counter-attack. So
we started the 2 years against Livingston. We thought you were the greatest. Now we're playing you because we think you're a pair of fucking diddies that can, can take the hit on this one.
Aye, because we don't want to get to Sunday and we've beaten Ferencváros 3-0, but we haven't gotten 3 points at Dundee. So they aren't mutually exclusive. I think you could have a weakened team against Ferencváros and get a positive result and also beat Dundee. But it's just how you do it. But the biggest game will always be the league games, particularly this season. While I would like to be in Europe after Christmas, if it means that we get closer to Rangers or either overtake them, then I don't particularly care.
On you go.
Just as well, this idea of, you know, whilst we're talking about rest, it only really works, you know, it's... You're trying to avoid injury, but see when you bring Kyogo on at, 50-odd minutes or 60 minutes, whatever he come on, you know, he's played, plus the injury time, he's played 40 minutes. So the rest isn't... I don't think he's going to be feeling too much better on Monday after Saturday's game than he would have been if he would have started the game. It's about trying to avoid injury.
Conversely, like, how much does missing out that midweek game and just playing weekend to weekend, how much would that help him, do you think? Would it make a massive difference? Just having, you know, he'll still be training, but not having that intensity of a game. Will that have an effect just to leave him out of a midweek game?
Yeah, if you can get 90 minutes rest into a player, particularly a midweek game, if you just go Saturday to Saturday, then it makes a huge difference. Changes the way you would train, prepare. But if you then... If you don't know if you're being dropped or if you're on the bench and then you come on, you're training much the same as the rest of the squad. So, you know, it is very different. It's very, very different.
Because I think the idea of like, of resting players is always one that I think personally I probably don't understand fully. It's like, see if you were to, we all know when players need rest, but say Kyogo doesn't play during the week and he trains, he doesn't have that 90-minute intensity and he plays at the weekend. How many more weeks can he go before he needs another rest? Does it work like that? Does that buy him another month of football playing two games a week? Or, you know, do you know what I mean, Alan?
Yeah, I think it can certainly prevent those kind of muscle injuries, soft tissue injuries. You know, those are the ones that become really prevalent if you're playing two games a week. I think particularly for Kyogo, given he's already 18 games into the J-League season when he came here, that's the other one you've got to be mindful of. But in saying that, we've run Callum McGregor pretty much into the ground for the last 3.5-4 years, and we've been quite content to do it. It just depends on the player what the tolerance for injury and pain is, and you know that vastly differs from player to player. But I've no idea what Kyogo's injury history is, or you know, he looks like a fairly strong fella, to be honest. He looks like he's well used to being on the receiving end of bad tackles. So,
you know, we'll... A man who's always enjoyed a bit of pain, Christopher Bowd. I'm not going to elaborate on that too much. What are you expecting from the game on Thursday? Obviously, we beat Ferencváros 2-0 at home. You know, really, we want Leverkusen to win their game against Betis. And then hopefully, if we can get the 3 points against Ferencváros this week, that takes us to 6 points. 1 point behind Betis. Obviously, we've got to play Leverkusen, of course, but it could all hinge potentially on the last game against Betis at home. You never know what might happen. What are you expecting from this week? Do you think we go there and we, again, we're going to impose ourselves because Ange isn't going to change the way he plays, but are you worried about it in any way?
Well, I'm nervous.
We know you wouldn't fucking change the team. You made that point perfectly clear.
Oh, 100%. I'm all in. Europe or bust. Forget the league. I've done that. I'm kind of confident-ish, especially for Celtic away in Europe. You should never be confident ever. That's amateur hour. But I'm relatively confident, or I was until Alan started speaking, and now I'm assuming that Urigidi and Murray and Scales are all going to be starting. But... No, I think if we play our game, I'm not frightened by Ferencváros. It's all on Celtic. It's whether or not we perform the way we can, as opposed to, and that's not to disrespect them, but I feel, you know, the performance we've seen against them at home, I'm happy. I'm happy we can get a result away.
Alan, we'll start with you for a starting lineup, since you obviously would like some changes. I know you don't look happy about it. What about the likes of James McCarthy? He came on, he was on the bench, obviously. He was meant to be back a couple of weeks ago, and that's him finally made the bench. Didn't obviously feature against Livingston. We've got the big tit that is near Beaton playing in midfield, which really fucking pains me. But do you think James McCarthy could be one? Could Mikey Johnson be one? Could James Forrest? Could Adam Montgomery? Are these the types of players that you think we could put in there? And, you know, one thing I would like to see potentially is getting Juranovic to right back. It's still something that pains me a bit. And I know we spoke earlier about Tony Ralston, and I hate to kind of drop the guy, but I'd like to see Juranovic playing his proper position, and maybe putting the likes of Adam Montgomery in there, because obviously the greatest ball and goalie can't play because we didn't fucking add him to the list. But are those the types of names you'd like to see?
I just like that Ralston's been dropped after the praise that we gave him at the start of the podcast. That's quite the flip-flop there.
Biggest Celtic man you've ever met.
Listen, tell him to take your family out, enjoy yourselves for a couple of days, celebrate that contract.
Well, leave stuffed a £50 note in his top pocket there.
I was just about to say,
Tony, son.
Imagine Louis in the welcome party, is the family leading it, just pulls his dad back, by the way. He's got no fucking chance playing on Thursday night. Enjoy the meal tonight.
Take your money, son.
Yeah, I mean, you are going to have to use a lot of those names you mentioned. You know, some of them, I think James Forrest, it might be a wee bit too soon. I think you're probably looking after the 10 minutes he got at the weekend, you'd maybe trying up that at 20 minutes, half an hour. The idea of him starting is probably a bit, you know, too soon. I think it'll be interesting to see who gets the nod at centre-half, obviously with Carl Starfelt likely to be out. I do think that you might then see James McCarthy get in, or potentially as Ismael Soro, get in that way, because Near Beathorn might then go to centre-half if he's favoured over Stephen Welsh. And I think history would suggest that Ange was more likely to go with Near Beathorn, you know, especially after using Welsh early. You are going to have to use these guys at some point, purely because you're going to be changing players in and out, ideally not from the start. James Forrest and Mikey Johnson are a different prospect, so they are clearly first team players. I would expect Johnson to start with Jota and Kyogo. I don't think Giakoumakis, I don't think he'll start. I think if you're picking your best team, I don't think he's in it at the moment. I think Johnson and Jota, particularly in a European game like that, when Ferencvaros are much more likely to have a go at you, Ange will back his own team and he'll back in his belief that they can go out and play their way. And I think having pace and having quality up front is the best way to do that. So that would be my three up top. If I had to pick midfield, then Turnbull, McGregor and James McCarthy, and Beaton in at centre-half. But, you know, that might change entirely come the pre-match press conference on Wednesday.
Boots, do you want to give us, you know, tell us who you're playing?
I think Ange will go with a lineup that Alan's mentioned. I think the fact you know, Beaton's had games recently, so he's more likely to drop into centre back than Welsh, who hasn't really seen a lot of game time. And then McCarthy was on the bench at the weekend, so as far as I can tell, he's ahead of Soro. Would I do anything differently? I probably prefer Welsh to Beaton at centre back at this point, if I'm honest. But as I say, he's been out the, you know, out the idea of the first team squad for a wee while now, so I find it unlikely. I'd assume it'd be Beaton that's playing.
Barry, for you, any changes you would make? Who would you put at centre half?
I'd go for Welsh as well. I think he might go for Welsh. But I think that Ange probably, he'll want to right the wrongs of Saturday, and that might be to our detriment, because he might think, oh, I'll go full strength and to try and get the result. And whether that has an effect on Sunday, as I've mentioned, I don't know. But I don't think there'll be many changes.
Do you think he could do the old Lennon tactic of, yous have let us down, so you're going to make up for it? You know, that way where I used to just play the exact same team again and go, no, fucking do better next time.
I thought you were going to say bring Soro and McCarthy in and put McGregor at left back. But
no.
But no, I don't see too many changes. I think maybe Welsh would come in. And that's all I can... Maybe Mikey Johnson for a badder. But other than that, I don't think there'll be... There isn't that many changes you can make. I think if you mentioned the likes of McCarthy and Montgomery, potentially, but I think that would really weaken the team. So it is a difficult one because, as you said about 10, 15 minutes ago, the league's a priority. But you could... I think a draw would be a good result over there. I do. Obviously, we'd love to win, but if we could get a draw and then a resounding victory on Sunday, then all well and good.
Yeah, I would absolutely like Welsh centre-half. I'm never going to pick a team when you're Beaton in it again. I've just been stung too many times. Don't want it. I think the Johnson one will be interesting if he plays him again. I didn't think he was very effective when he came on, but it's probably not fair. As I said last week, or on the reaction, last reaction I did, I think my expectations of Mikey Johnson are just way too high. And I probably need to be a wee bit more grounded and understand that the boy's just coming back and he needs that consistency. And your game probably doesn't come as easy as what we all think. It takes time. But then, you know, maybe this game might be a good game to start him in, that he can get another 90 minutes or maybe not 90 minutes, but, you know, 70, 80 minutes under his belt. And it might kind of set him up for this run that we're going on in terms of games, because we have the international break, obviously, coming up after the Dundee game at the weekend. We then played 12 games, which takes us to the obviously the derby on the second. That's 12 games before we get a break. It's always hectic at this time of year, but as we've alluded to throughout the podcast, with the lack of depth we've got in the squad, those 12 games are going to be tough. Your European fixtures in there, you've got cup fixtures in there, obviously a lot of Premiership games, and it could make or break our season in terms of whether we are in a genuine title race by the end of it. So the kind of international break that's coming up is going to be all important, and we'll cover that later. Let's get a quick kind of prediction. I know these things are a bit futile, but let's give us a quick prediction for Ferencváros, Barry.
I'm going to say a 2-1 victory for Celtic.
2-1, Bowd?
You've got a summary? Summary? I've forgotten words.
Summary down, son.
A little bit of symmetry. 2-0. A wee 4-0 over the odds.
Alan?
I think they'll come at us and I think we'll enjoy it. I think we'll win. I think it'll be a 4-1 victory.
Oh, lovely. Ooh.
I'm gonna go 3-1. I think you know, maybe as Alan said earlier, I think Ange maybe knows that he maybe made some mistakes at the weekend, and I think usually when that happens, he very much wants to correct them and show that he's learned from it. So whether we see a change in the team, I think Ange and the team will have the bit between their teeth to get a good result.
We're not angry at Ange, we're just a bit disappointed.
Aye. We probably were at the fucking weekend, right enough. Get him out. he's only ever a draw away from being back to the fucking Harold Bishop treatment, you know what I mean? He needs to fucking remember that. Barry?
It's funny because Alan and I did the live pod last Thursday, and we kind of said that Ange had enough in the bank that if there was a bump in the road, we wouldn't hold it against him too much. And God, the amount of stuff I was screaming that between the 80th and the 95th minute, I was like, if only I could have seen myself a couple of days ago. But it's just, I think it just shows how much we want this title.
It's been a fan, isn't it? It's just been a supporter.
Especially after the disappointment and how horrendous and horrific last season was. When there was a bit of hope to get that chance to go top and we didn't take it. But I dare say there'll be, and I hope there'll be more opportunities to do that. So hope Ange has learned from it and then he uses it to not make that mistake again.
The game of the weekend before this next international break, on Sunday we go away to Dundee, a Dundee team who are obviously struggling a bit. I think they did get a result at the weekend. They won their game at the weekend. I am not sure who it was against. Does anybody know?
Real Madrid.
I'm not sure. I don't know. Real Madrid, yes, absolutely. It was against St Mirren. They beat St Mirren 1-0 in Paisley. They're pish. They're full of pish. They are probably going to end up doing what St Johnstone and Livingston have done to a certain extent, and they will sit deep, I would imagine, because
we'll probably learn more about that on the weekend update, Louis.
The words just out my mouth, Bowd. I was about to say that as well.
Available on the cynic.co.
It does say maybe mention. I was going to maybe know, but it's done there. Yes, on the weekend update, you'll get all the speculation about the Dundee lineup, but you'll fucking hear it now as well. So they're probably going to play the same way as what we've seen the likes of Livingston play. They'll sit deep. They desperately need points to kind of keep ahead of St Johnstone. Now, Alan, obviously, if maybe you did get your wish and we kind of did rest our players and the full focus becomes Dundee at the weekend, what are you hoping for and what are you fearing most from an away trip to Dundee after the latest little blip?
I think I'm very, very, very attempting fate, very wary of it. But I think they're a good matchup for us. Livingston is probably one of the most disciplined defensive teams you'll face in a league, as in they stick rigidly to exactly what the manager's asked them to do. Dundee are probably the exact opposite. they don't have the same fitness. To me, they don't have the same determination to do exactly their job, and they don't work as a team. So I really hope that we can go and exploit that. That you go from, you know, playing a really good quality opposition Thursday night. And the one thing I would always say about Europe is that we tend to do very well off the back of Europe, because sometimes that lift in quality can really then up your own level. So hopefully we see that on Sunday. Dundee's a place that I always feel confident going to. And I just think under, you know, this manager, some of the players they've got, I think they've not quite figured that out yet. They got absolutely cuffed last week at home as well, from Ross County, who'd been really poor. So to me, you've got to go there and you've got to take the game to them and you've got to win it. Anything less would be, well, I mean, you think we felt bad on Saturday going into a game on Thursday. We know what it's like if you don't win the game before the international break. We know what it's like. So you've got to go there, get the points. Two wins this week would be just a tonic, to be honest.
Do you think that if we did get the result the weekend, Alan, that if you look back over the over the block of games since the last international break, how would you rate that? Do you think we would have to look at that pretty favourably considering what had happened previously? Eh?
I'd have sawn my own hand off for that run of results, to be honest, the way we were in September. Aye, definitely. If we get 3 points on Sunday, then this league run, given where we were, is a real mean feat. And then we'll be able to step back and take a bit of context. What shot us in the foot last year was we were out of a title race by late December. This year, the aim has to be get to that game in the second. And it's not a league decider, but get to that game not absolutely needing to win, otherwise you're out of a title race, because that's where we were last year. Anything else is progress.
Yeah, but Barry, I mean, the game on Sunday, you know, as Alan says, you don't want to go into an international break on a downer, and we've had a draw, a negative result, negative discussions after it. If we had another one, you know, it would really set us back probably in terms of the progress we were making. It's probably quite important though to go into the game not trying to, you know, not taking the baggage of the Livingston game into the Dundee game. Do you know what I mean? Like, what are you kind of hoping for in terms of how you see the team play on Sunday?
I don't think, like Alan said, Dundee strike me as the kind of team that, and I know that we haven't managed to score against Livingston, but I think see if we'd scored on Saturday, I don't think Livingston would have changed. Their discipline would have been the same. Whereas if we score against Dundee, just the character in their team and a lot of unsavoury characters in that team, it must be said, I don't think they'd be as disciplined. So if we could score early, I think they would chuck the game plan. They strike me as that kind of team that if Celtic can score in the first 20 minutes, I think it's our choosing of how many we score. So it just comes down to team selection, as we've said all pod. And I think that if we can score in the first half, then I don't see us having any problems. Famous last words, but Dundee just strike me as a team who have no real desire or any real discipline to stick to what their manager's trying to do. So, and on your point about the lingering feeling of Livingston, it's probably good in a way that we do have this game midweek, because it's not the next game, so we'll get this to focus on. And as Alan says, we have to raise our levels for Europe, and hopefully some of that can spill over, that risen level can spill over to Sunday.
Bode, do you think, you know, despite the fact that, as Barry says, we've got a game in between, do you think the Dundee game, you know, kind of going back to the point of taking baggage into it, do you think it's an opportunity to, you know, show that Livingston game was a one-off? Do you think it's a chance to prove a point, or do you think the squad and the management just won't look at it like that? It's just, you got to get the 3 points, that's it.
I think very much. I mean, talk's the talk of just take it game at a time, and that probably is the smartest way to do it. But do you know what? See, if we're a wee bit angry at ourselves and we give Dundee a wee spanking, I'm all for that. As Barry said, some of the team...
Can Griffiths play? No.
Nah.
I don't even think he gets to play for them now. I don't think he started.
He was on the bench, I think, the weekend. I think before that he was playing or getting some minutes.
Was anyone in the stadium of, not to be ageist, of the older variety on Saturday saying, would have scored if Griffiths was playing.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely.
Aye, absolutely.
There'd be a few dark horses in the Cynic that said that as well. Don't you
worry about that for a fact. Absolutely.
One goal in seven at Dundee, but he would have made the difference at the weekend. Absolutely.
You just smashed that penalty down the middle.
Absolutely. Right, listen, I think we'll wrap it up there. Obviously, you know, we say this every week, but every week is a big week for Celtic just now. I think I feel like that the last couple of seasons, probably because of last season, but every couple of seasons, I like segment the games into international breaks, like this block of games, this block of games. And listen, I'm sure the management do that, and it's a very obvious way of working. But I think if we can get a positive result, obviously during the week in Europe, let's hope so. Let's hope we can do the job on Thursday. But I think more importantly, as we've said, if we can get the 3 points at the weekend, then it would wrap up a huge improvement in terms of the block of games that we've had since the last international break. We will be back next week. Boud, you'll probably be back as well. I should probably give a shout out to Christopher Somani, who is not here, obviously, this week. I'm sure the listeners are missing him very much. Good for them. I'm sure he'll be back soon. This has been a fucking delight. Boud, God bless you. Thanks for being here.
Cheers. Hail, hail.
Barry Gallagher, it's great to see you, man. I hope, you know, if you retire this week, I hope you come out of it quick and we see you again.
Well, it all depends on how Thursday and Sunday go, but hopefully I'm fighting fit for the next time you'll have me. Cheers, Lee. Thanks.
Good man. And Alan, it's been an absolute pleasure. You can come back anytime you like.
Thanks, all, mate. Thanks for having me. Have a good week.
Thank you. This has been The Cynic Weekly, and we will speak to you down the road.